Welcome to our first Molson Coors Growers Group podcast. My name is Duncan Rawson and I'm going to be your host for the next few minutes or so. We've decided to try a podcast this time rather than a newsletter because this is coming out during harvest and we thought that most of you would be able to listen to this while sat on the combine or on the tractor or even operating the grain dryer. Well, who would know all those months ago that we'd still be dealing with the impact of COVID? Freedom Day came and went a few weeks ago, but it still doesn't feel as though we're overly free of the virus yet. However, things do appear to be getting better. By all accounts, crops are looking good, pubs and bars are opening up, beer sales are increasing, and you never know, I might even be able to get away for a week's holiday. It was also great to actually be able to meet a number of you at the recent regional meetings, which for COVID restrictions, as you'll be aware, replaced the annual summer meeting this year. And I'd just like to say thank you to Oliver Smith and to Andy Roberts and their families who kindly hosted these. For the Northwest and the Southwest meetings, which we sadly had to postpone, we do plan to hold these later in the year. So coming back to the podcast, in this episode, we're going to hear from Jerry, who will give an update from Molson Coors. We'll hear from Jonathan Hoyland, who will provide a view on the malting barley market. We'll also report back on the key findings from the sustainability survey with an interview with Jerry and Andrew Hill. And lastly, but not least, we speak to Oliver Smith, our newest member of the steering group, who will provide a view from the farm. So sit back and I hope you enjoy the following interviews. As always, when we start our newsletter, albeit the podcast this year, we start with Jerry Dyson from Molson Coors to give a company update. So welcome, Jerry, to our first podcast. And, you know, we all know that it's been a very challenging year for businesses and for particularly Molson Coors. But how are things shaping up now?
Hi, Duncan. I think things they remain challenging. I think they settled down somewhat, but I think it has been honestly a very difficult year to operate within, and it continues for various reasons to be a bit like that. Actually, yeah. To be honest, obviously the first part of the year was we were obviously in lockdown very much with all pubs and restaurants closed, operating purely on the off trade. As you know, Molson Coors aren't in the UK. It's not their strongest suit, the off trade. We're more of an on trade based company in the UK. So we were obviously having to supply into the off trade at much higher levels than we would normally, and I think we achieved that very well. Clearly, we were all, as a business, we were all looking forward, as I think probably everybody was actually, to the opening of the pubs in April, and one of the issues, of course, we had then is trying to predict in advance.
Yeah.
What the level of uptake, how the pubs were going to open, what the restrictions meant. There was outside drinking, if you remember.
Yes.
And what it would all mean in terms of demand. I mean, we got pretty close, actually. We were quite optimistic about the volumes that were going to return to the on-trade in April. Mm-hmm. And we predicted quite high levels right from the outset. And in actual fact, I think we actually underpredicted. The return in the on-trade in April was even higher than we thought.
Okay.
And got to levels of sort of 90% of normal. I mean, when we say normal, that's the sort of pre-pandemic years of 2019. So we had a very big uptake in April, larger than everybody thought, and we largely managed that, and I think better than several of our main competitors who struggled in several areas. Mm-hmm. I think that was helped by the weather, which I don't need to remind that the growers was obviously quite the sun was shining in April, albeit it was cold. And so that helped the outside drinking and we did pretty well. Weather came in May was rather wet, volume in the on trade dropped off a bit. And then June with the Euros, now subsequently since everything's been opened up, things would begin to settle down. I think I say the on-trade volumes are probably slightly lower than up till this point have been slightly lower than they would have been in a normal year. The off-trade still is still performing well.
So it's the
So overall, I think we're quite pleased with the way things have gone actually, and I mean there are definite challenges in the market. Predicting volume is one. Supply of empty containers, getting the containers back from pubs is another. In the off trade, there's a chronic global shortage of cans, so that's impacting on supply. So there are still issues out there, but overall, I would say that we're pretty pleased with the way things have gone and where we've ended up in July. So well, I think that I guess that would be my sort of state of play at the moment.
Do you think, I mean, with the increase of the off trade and obviously people buying their booze in the supermarkets, etc., do you think an element of that's going to stick? Do you think that's a consumer habit that will change for the longer term, or do you think we'll revert quite quickly back to where we were pre-pandemic?
Well, our on-trade team have always been very optimistic about the on-trade, and the fact that it would return to reasonably normal levels. Now, and we've maintained that position and largely been proved right, I think. So, I mean that. Definitely have been casualties, of course. The prolonged shutdown of outlets means that it's been too much for some, and there have been some casualties of that. But those aside, I think the Molson Coors view is that the UK on-trade is very robust. It's sort of woven into the fabric of our way of life, and our anticipation. Notwithstanding some of those casualties that I spoke about, but largely we will return to the on-trade and off-trade levels that are pretty much as they were before. So I think that would be our view at this stage.
I mean, it's a very funny time at the moment, isn't it? I mean, we've had Freedom Day, as it's called, and sort of opening up, etc., but numbers still racing forwards and all sorts of things in the press. Some people optimistic, some people pessimistic about the future. But what's your views in terms of the beer market over the next 12 months? Are you feeling optimistic or are you feeling pessimistic?
I think Molson Coors are feeling pretty optimistic, really. I mean, we've invested in the hard seltzer market. We have a brand called Threefold, and we are well positioned in that market, which has been enormously successful in the US and is anticipated to be a very major category in the UK. I say we've invested in our brand in Threefold. We've got a new canning line to be installed in Burton that will supply that new category. We've got a very good brand called Mandarin, which is in competing in the world beer category, that has done extremely well in the on-trade. And our on-trade team have been done tremendous work in getting the installations for that new brand completed, and we're seeing some really, really good volumes for Mandarin, which is a sort of a beer from the Heralds from Spain originally. And we've got a number of activations of our brands right across our portfolio. Aspals is doing extremely well. Doombar remains the number one cask ale. So we're pretty optimistic, and when we changed our name into Molson Coors Beverage Company, we always anticipated that we would venture a bit more into the wider beverage market, and we've made a number of with agreements across a wider range of non-beer brands and products that enable us to participate well in a wider beverage portfolio. So I think overall, I think we're pretty optimistic for the future. I think the feeling is we've come through a very hard time, and we can be optimistic looking into 2022.
Yeah, that's a superb way to end that end segment of our podcast with a very upbeat note. So, thank you very much, Jerry,
No problem.
and yeah, it's a good way to end. Cheers. In this segment, we're going to have a brief look at the malting barley market with Jonathan Hoyland from Frontier. Before we actually get into the market dynamics, we're now into the barley harvest. So, what are the yields and quality looking like?
Welcome all. I think we can look at the winter barley harvest and split it roughly into two zones. One is Anglia in the southeast, and the other is further west and north. In Anglia in the southeast, we're seeing lower yields, good nitrogens between 155 and 175, but smaller grain size, particularly on the 2.5 millimeter sieve, where they are particularly not so special at all. Yields are probably down about probably 10, at least 10%, I would say, in that zone.
Okay.
The further west you go and the further north you go, then you get into average to maybe even slightly better average yields, mid-range to low nitrogen again, 1.5 to 1.7s, and the screenings are somewhat better, where the top sieve ranges between, say, 75 to 90%. So it is a distinct split in the country at the moment.
Yeah. And overall, how far are we through the winter barley harvest?
I would say, on average, we're probably about 80% of the way there.
Yeah.
Ironically enough, most of the country started at a similar time, whether it was Lancashire, the borders, East Anglia, or Hampshire. We all started about the same time. So I'd say, yeah, 80 to 85% done with the northeast and North Yorkshire. Probably 65% done, and everywhere else nearing 100%.
Okay. And what about the market dynamics? I mean, it's been a really sort of interesting, shall we say, 12 to 18 months. So what's happening in the markets at the moment, and what's that going to mean for prices?
Over the last couple of weeks, it's been really quite choppy. Everybody has its eyes on the US and South America. Every newsletter refers to that market, and that's pushing around the feed base. And also, we're seeing the start of perhaps the decline in wheat yields in Russia. They started off pretty well as an average yield, but now they're deteriorating a little. So that dynamic is pushing around the feed base. As far as malting barley is concerned, we are looking at a little bit of tension in the marketplace because of the rainfall that has been around in France and in Germany. Our own hot picture here is of sunshine and showers. So I would say the market is a little tense, with the malting barley element to be resolved if the weather dries up. But this feed base is always going to be choppy because of all the influences we've heard about in Brazil and North America.
And lastly, Jonathan, there's been a huge amount of talk, particularly in recent weeks, about driver shortages in the haulage sector. As malting barley grows, do we need to be concerned about this?
I think probably all cereal growers need to have an eye on it. I don't think it's going to get any easier. We're going to have these peaks in movement that we traditionally have. One is harvest and the other one is late November, December. Mm-hmm. And we're not suddenly going to rustle up a load more qualified drivers. And we are seeing one sector compete against another sector, you know, whether it's retail, construction, agriculture. So I think whether it's malting barley, which can actually get hauled over quite long distances, or whether it's feed wheat or feed barley or anything that goes on a bulk tipper, we are going to get periods of challenge for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much for that. And I think it's going to be a market we're going to have to keep a close eye on for the foreseeable future. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
So the sustainability survey this year has been a big part of what we've been doing with the Molson Coors Growers Group and put quite a lot of effort into that. I was going to start with Jerry and just ask, you know, why is the sustainability survey so important to Molson Coors and what has been your reaction to it this year?
Well, the sustainability survey is important. Sustainability is important for Molson Coors overall. I mean, I think everyone would feel the same way. Everyone feels it's the right thing to do. For Molson Coors, it makes business sense. And it's very important for our customers now. They are now asking questions of Molson Coors's brands about sustainability credentials. So we have to give authentic answers to that, and also it's the employees and the stakeholders within Molson Coors also demanded. They want to work for a company that is operating in a sustainable way. So there's an internal pressure for sustainability to become important as far as our agenda is concerned.
Yeah.
So in terms of the sustainability survey itself, barley is the biggest raw material we get in the brewing side. We want to play our part in the sustainability journey that Molson Coors are on, and we want to be able to show all the stakeholders, internal employees, customers, investors or whatever else, you know, what progress we're making and what progress we already have made throughout the life of the group. So this sustainability survey was important for us to put a stake into the ground and say, this is where we are at the moment. This is where we've moved from in the last 10 years since the group was started. And generally to sort of plot on a sort of a group-wide basis how we're progressing in terms of increasing the sustainability credentials of our biggest raw material.
Yeah.
So that's the reasoning behind the survey that we did this year.
I think what resonates with me is about the fact that we're just looking at the journey, if you like, and where we are on that journey, rather than sort of, you know, trying to pick out any sort of individual farms, etc. It's about the group as a whole. Andrew, in terms of the survey itself, yeah, what were the highlights of the survey for you?
I think that we've got a decent set of results from over half of the growers that have answered all of these questions, and there's been some really good varied questions in there. In terms of specific highlights, I think it's really good to see the varied range of nitrogen application across those that completed the survey, both on winter barley and spring barley. Actually, it's a wide range. It's not a narrow range. So I think there are some learnings there to understand a bit more about what levels of application and the timings of application that people are doing differently, and whether soil types got something to play there. Mm-hmm. And the other highlight for me would be the increasing level of biodiversity across the Molson Coors Growers Group growers over a 10-year time period. So whether it be cover crops, woodland, hedgerows, or margins, I mean, just picking up on cover crops, that's gone from, you know, a few hundred cover crop hectares to nearly 4,000 cover crop hectares across the group that that completed the survey. And I think that's really interesting because it shows the direction that the Molson Coors growers are taking with regards to biodiversity of their soils. And I think that reflects really interestingly on the direction of agriculture in the UK over the next few years, going on probably over the next decade.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you picking up on the nitrogen results, and we have to accept it was an unusual year within there. But are there any other elements of the survey that surprised you?
Two standout questions I think that surprised me were 11% of the growers actually irrigated their malting barley. Mm-hmm. That surprised me a bit, actually. I know that there's some light land that can burn up pretty quickly on some of that spring barley, but I didn't think it'd be that high that would irrigate. And the other one that, again, is a more progressive, question, and something that sustainability is going to be really hot on in the future, is about carbon. And 19% of those that completed the survey had either completed a carbon orbit or audit, or indeed answered some questions around carbon scoring in their on their farms. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Are you surprised that it was that lower than you expected or higher than you expected?
It was higher than I expected, actually. Yeah. Because I think carbon, there's been a lot of chatter about it in the farming press and around agriculture recently, but it's still very, very new. So I was quite surprised at the high level of completed or knowledge about carbon at this stage.
Yeah. Just one thing that we've spoken about quite a bit as we're sort of developing the survey is the fact that, you know, what we're trying to do is collect information for Molson Coors, but what we want to do is obviously add value where we can back to the farmers as well. So completing this survey is a good thing for them to do, or they feel there's value in it. Do you think there are opportunities to do more with this survey going forward than we've done in this first year?
I do. I really do. And I think Jerry, just a few minutes ago, talking about the importance of sustainability to Molson Coors is a really key part of that. I think from the farmers that I've spoken to with regards to completing the survey, they crave the feedback. You know, that's what's important to them. If they're going to be filling out this survey, which gives us a really interesting set of results, it's what are we going to do with that? And the farmers would like to know from the steering group, from Jerry, what it is that they can do to make sure that they are sustainably farming for Molson Coors in the future. So I think just increasing that communication and feedback back to the growers, obviously getting a high percentage of growers to complete the survey as well, I think is really the direction that we need to move in.
Yeah,
I agree with that. I mean, I would like to see this as a sort of obviously a starting point, and I would, and as Andrew says, get a better response rate. The idea always was to make it straightforward to complete and get a better response rate. But I think there's a bit about nitrogen for example. I mean, I think there is a wide range there, and what I would like for these kind of surveys, if not this time or in the future, to be able to say, okay, well, yeah, soil types will vary and this will vary and that will vary depending on where you are in England, but just sort of use it as a best practice and perhaps pick out some areas that that'd be worthwhile discussing. And I say all the farms will be different, of course, but perhaps there's some best practice learnings that we can get from this survey that will be sort of absolutely vital going forward in terms of improving your overall performance. And I think the best practice and learning from others, mm-hmm, one of the key elements of this survey, to be honest. Yeah, we're tracking the trend and we hope to be going in the right direction. But I think we can assist that by sort of picking out some of the really interesting results and perhaps using those farms as a sort of to stimulate thought going forward, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the last area I was going to pick up on was that I think the survey's been great and we've got some really good, solid information that's come back, and that's very positive. We were aiming for a minimum sort of 65% response rate, and certainly that was the hurdle to get over to get some discount on beer anyway. And we fell short of that. And I just wondered, well, both of you actually, but perhaps start with Jerry, you know, what are your views on this? And you know, what do you think we can do to try and incentivize more farmers to take part as we move into the following year?
Yeah, I mean, it was below what I wanted. And we did put, and a lot of people did put quite a lot of work in to try and get the rate up as high as possible. And I would have liked to have got higher, as Duncan, as he said. But I'm hoping that the sort of initial survey and how we publicise it will encourage people to complete it in the future. And certainly, as has been said in before, I'm more of a carrot than a stick man in this respect. So I think there's some innate suspicion about the survey that Molson Coors have some kind of agenda on this. We haven't. The only thing we are trying to get and to plot the trend is that we're sort of increasingly farming in a more sustainable way. That's, and as I said innumerable times, look, we're not going to tell people how to farm their farms. That would be a nonsense. But we certainly want to encourage, through best practice, you know, the group to progress in the right way. I'm hoping that by some of the meetings we've had and sort of constant messaging that we've given out, that people will fill the survey involuntarily to greater levels in the future.
Yeah. Yeah,
it has to be said. It is important for Molson Coors, and if we don't get the response rate, then we'll have to look at saying, okay, well, this is a good contract. It's and the least we expect of you is a completion of the survey in future, and so not that it's necessarily my preferred option, but making it a compulsory part of getting a contract might be something that we consider in the future. Other groups do that. But we would have to consider it if we don't get a meaningful response rate, and so that's something we would consider in the future.
Yeah,
I think that's a really interesting point, Jerry. You mentioned other businesses do it, and from Frontier's perspective, we see other supply chains that are doing it, and it is a requirement for those contracts. So your approach so far, and Molson Coors' approach so far, of inviting growers to complete the survey and indeed providing discount on Molson Coors products is a really great one. It hasn't worked to the degree that we wanted it to this year, and so going forward, to get a higher response rate, maybe that's something we look at alongside the contract. I think I'll go back to my points around what can we do so the growers feel more engaged with the survey, is that instead of them filling out the survey and actually from our side hearing very little back, is to feedback more about the results so that they really feel they are getting some sort of reward, you know, not monetary beneficiary reward, but just feedback on how the group is performing on a sustainability sort of level. And that would encourage more of them to hopefully take part in 12 months' time.
Yeah. I think it's worth saying that although we're doing a podcast this year, it's not going to replace the newsletter. We will push a newsletter out as well as per normal for those who can't access the podcast particularly. But we'll also send the survey and results out to everybody as well. So, you know, everybody will have the opportunity to read through the results. But I think, you know, going forward, we can do more with it. We can start to look at sort of some soft benchmarking for the group, so they can just sort of see where they sit against others, and perhaps just ask the questions, you know, if they're performing better or performing worse, just ask those questions. I'll draw it to a close, if I may. Thank you both very much for running through the surveys. Like I said at the beginning, it's been a big part of what we've been doing this year. And you know, whilst we would have liked more responses to it, of course, I think the quality of the information that we've actually captured from those who did complete it has been fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very glad we've done it, and I'd echo your thoughts on the quality of the information. Yeah, it would be great to get higher levels, but there's some really interesting stuff came out of it, and really glad we did it, actually.
Welcome to Oliver Smith, who is our newest member of the steering group. And as we usually do in our newsletter, we try to feature the different members of the steering group and go around in turn. And poor Ollie's being actually volunteered to be the first one to do a podcast. So thank you very much for that, Ollie. Just want to get to know you a little bit better and understand, to start with, I guess, you know, where are you and what is it that you're actually farming?
Okay, so we're in Mid Lincolnshire. I manage the arable operation for a firm called Sturton Estates, and we're a primarily arable but very diverse operation near Bournemouth. So we are about 800 hectares of arable, including contract farming agreements and FBTs. Yeah. We also have a red deer herd, a biomass and landscape products enterprise, and an events enterprise. Like I say, I tend to steer clear of the events because I'm far too grumpy for the general public.
Excellent. And yeah, what would you describe as being your goals for the business? You know, what are you trying to achieve in the long term with the business?
So long term, my own vision and that of my boss is to sweat the asset as much as we can. So to try and make best use of the estate that we've got at our disposal. So all of the enterprises do dovetail quite nicely from a workload point of view, and that's really where we are on the whole business at the moment. You know, on my side, we're working towards an arable joint venture with another farm. Mm-hmm. So sharing out machinery costs, which are pretty ludicrous these days, and specializing in what we do.
Yeah. And how has this season been for you so far? I mean, it's been an easy season perhaps than last year, but at the same time, it's been a little bit challenging. So how's it been for you?
Yeah, sort of end of September last year, I thought, oh, good Lord, here we go again. We were facing pretty wet period right at the point at which we were going to start drilling. And it almost looked like we weren't going to get our winter program in again. But few very, very, very long days in mid to late October, and we did actually end up getting our winter cropping completed as per plan. But wasn't without its challenges. And mm-hmm. drilling late it's not ideal. It's great to keep blackgrass levels low, but we do have a few odd headlands and things that got paddled during that time. So and moving into the spring. We've had another challenging spring, really. So really, really, really dry conditions through March, and then into a really dull period in June, which hasn't helped. Certainly, winter mm-hmm. barley, which is the only crop we've cut so far.
Yeah,
it's quite screeny, so it looks like it's probably not finished off with the potential that it perhaps could have had.
Okay. And have you had, apart from sort of screenings which you see, have you had any other results back on that so far?
Not yet, no. We should be expecting those over the next day or two.
Yeah. And what's it looking like for next year?
In what respect, sorry, Duncan?
In terms of your sort of cropping, where you're looking to take the business next year.
Okay, so cropping-wise, we'll be fairly similar. We will be looking to reintroduce oilseed rape, which we've taken a holiday from this for this harvest for various reasons, but only if conditions at the time that we're keen to drill it mm-hmm. are favourable.
Yeah.
We grow wheat barley, oats, sugar beet, oilseed rape, and beans. So if we do grow rape, that may well, you know, knock beans on the head. But that's still to be decided. And in the wider enterprise, we've got a 12-year-old stewardship agreement now with Natural England, and we need to try and modify it to better reflect the environmental needs of the estate and the needs of the business as well. Yeah. So we've got some interesting conversations to be had with Natural England and the RPA on that.
Right.
And we're hoping that sometime in the next 12 months, we might actually get some clarity from government on ongoing policy, because it's all pretty woolly at the moment. It's quite difficult to make long-term plans.
Yeah, fingers crossed with that. I suppose the last question is, you're a Molson Coors grower. What does it mean to you to be a Molson Coors grower and to be part of the steering group?
I've always thought it's a very, very mutually beneficial contract. We over in the east here, are fortunate on certain land types to be able to grow good malting barley, and it's really important to me as a manager that we have, we're a stakeholder in the conversation for barley supply. So, I've always seen it as supply chain done right, because, quite often, as far as small grains concerned, supply chains all in one direction. So I think I think it's a great initiative and something I'm very proud to be a part of.
Okay, well, thank you, Ollie. Like I say, it was just get a bit of a snapshot and a view from the farm, but that was fascinating. Thank you very much.
No worries at all. You're welcome.
We hope you've enjoyed our first Molson Coors Growers Group podcast. If you have any ideas how we might improve on this in the future, please do let us know. But in the meantime, can we wish you a very happy and successful harvest?